When we picture a corporate ethics investigation, being derailed, we usually imagine something straight out of a Hollywood movie.
Oh, absolutely. Like a high-speed paper shredder whirring in some dark, locked office.
Right. Or, I mean, whispered threats echoing in an empty concrete parking garage, or a sleek briefcase full of hush money just sliding across a mahogany table.
Yeah, we expect the disruption to be dramatic and intentional.
Exactly. And obviously malicious.
That classic corporate thriller scenario really primes us to look for the overt villain. We're basically trained to spot the person who is definitively breaking the rules, acting with clear, corrupt intent to subvert the system.
But in the real world, though, the thing that blows up a major corporate investigation usually doesn't look like a crime at all.
No, not at all.
It doesn't look malicious. It looks like a completely normal, friendly chat in the hallway right next to the water cooler.
Which is what makes it so dangerous.
Right. So today we are exploring a really fascinating compliance training scenario from Excellus, and it is all about the invisible weight of leadership.
It's a great scenario.
It really is. If you are a manager, an employee, or just a lifelong learner fascinated by the strange psychology of the workplace, this deep dive is for you. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
What happens when a boss thinks they are just being a responsible manager, but their employee feels like they are being trapped and interrogated?
Well, we will be looking at how authority fundamentally alters communication, regardless of the speaker's actual intent.
Right, because the intent doesn't always match the impact.
Exactly. Because what a leader thinks they're projecting often has absolutely no relation to what the person lower on the organizational chart is actually experiencing.
Wow, yeah.
And that disconnect, I mean, it can destroy a multi-million-dollar internal probe in a matter of seconds.
That is wild. Before we get into the heavy rules of compliance and the legal fallout, we first need to look at the inciting incident itself.
Yeah, let's set the scene.
We have to understand how two smart, rational professionals can experience the exact same two-minute hallway conversation so entirely differently.
It's all about perspective.
All right, let's look at our two main players. First, we have Robert Chen. He is the VP of sales.
High-level guy.
Very high level. And second, we have an unnamed employee who works deep within his larger department.
Okay.
Now, Robert knows that there is an active internal ethics investigation running. He was informed about it by the compliance team, and he was specifically told not to discuss it with his staff while they conduct their interviews.
Which, that is a standard organizational directive.
Right.
The goal is to keep the waters calm, prevent rumors from spreading, and just let the compliance investigators do their work without any internal noise complicating the fact-finding process.
Makes sense. But one day, Robert catches this particular employee in the hallway, right between meetings.
Just a casual run-in.
Yeah, totally casual. He knows she was involved in some of the specific accounts currently being looked at. So he just casually pulls her aside and says something like, "Hey, you were in those meetings last year. I just want to know if there's anything I should be aware of. How's that investigation going?"
Wow. And looking at Robert's internal monologue, he truly believes he is just doing his job.
Just a quick check-in.
Exactly. I mean, he is a vice president of sales. He's responsible for massive revenue targets and a huge team.
Right. He's got a lot on his plate.
Yeah, so in his mind, he has a duty to know what is coming down the pipeline that might affect his team's workflow or disrupt his quarterly projections.
So he thinks he's just being proactive.
He does. He keeps his voice casual. He doesn't threaten her. He isn't physically looming over her. He literally walks away from this brief interaction thinking he just executed a routine managerial check-in.
I imagine Robert just sees himself as a guy looking at a spreadsheet of potential risks, just trying to fill in a blank cell.
That's a perfect way to describe his mindset.
But let's flip the camera to the employee's perspective,
Yeah.
because for her, the reality of that hallway chat is entirely different.
Completely different.
She is actually a key witness in this active investigation.
Right, so she's in the thick of it.
Yeah. She was interviewed by the compliance team 2 weeks ago. She provided them with a lot of detailed, sensitive information. And crucially, she has a follow-up interview scheduled for next week.
So she is an actively cooperating witness navigating a highly sensitive corporate process.
Right.
She is already operating under a significant amount of baseline stress.
Totally. Then suddenly, the vice president of her entire division stops her in a relatively private hallway and starts asking specific questions about it.
The panic would be instantaneous.
Oh, absolutely. Like, does Robert know she's a cooperating witness?
Right. Did someone in compliance leak her name to the executive team?
Yeah. Is her continued cooperation with the investigation now fully visible to the man who ultimately controls her performance reviews, her project assignments, and her annual bonuses?
It's terrifying for her. The psychological burden placed on her in that instant is massive.
This is crushing.
It is a moment of pure, paralyzing panic, usually masked by a polite, frozen workplace smile.
Oh, we all know that smile.
Right. Her brain is no longer processing his words. It is running a rapid-fire threat assessment regarding her livelihood.
And the result of that panic is devastating for the investigation.
Completely.
She gives Robert a super vague, non-committal answer just to physically escape the hallway.
Get out of there as fast as possible.
Yeah, and then she immediately goes back to her desk and cancels her upcoming compliance interview, citing a vague scheduling conflict.
Wow.
She completely shuts down. And just like that, the entire investigation goes cold.
Because without her continued information and testimony, the compliance team hits a brick wall.
The trail just vanishes.
Yeah, and the ultimate irony is that Robert never even finds out why the investigation stalled out. He goes about his month entirely unaware that his casual question was the torpedo that sank the ship.
It is wild how fragile these processes are. I mean, it's like a referee casually walking over and asking a player about a highly contested foul right before an instant replay review.
That's a great analogy.
Right. Like, even if the referee is just making polite conversation while they wait for the video to load, the player's going to panic and second guess everything.
Oh, without a doubt.
But I have to ask, wait, Robert didn't yell at her? He didn't threaten her job? He didn't instruct her to lie or hide documents?
He didn't do any of that.
So how did this break the investigation so thoroughly without a single overt threat?
What's fascinating here is that the power differential does all the heavy lifting.
The power differential?
Yeah. The witness does not need to hear an explicit threat for her behavior to change drastically. When the person asking the supposedly casual question is the very same person who decides if you get promoted or marginalized, the risk calculation changes instantly in your brain.
So it's the context.
Exactly. The authority of his title amplifies his casual curiosity into a deafening warning siren.
It sounds like it isn't about what he said at all. It is entirely about who he is within the corporate hierarchy.
Spot on. The structural dynamic dictates the reality of the conversation. Since Robert didn't use explicit threats or aggressive language, we have to look at the underlying mechanism that caused the employee to withdraw so suddenly.
Okay, what is that mechanism?
Well, the researchers at Excellus have a brilliant term for this specific dynamic. They call it proximity pressure.
Proximity pressure. That perfectly captures the claustrophobia of the situation.
It really does. It's a key part of their decision readiness engine taxonomy.
How does the source material define that mechanism in practice?
Proximity pressure occurs when a person with organizational authority places themselves in close, private contact with a witness or a complainant during an active inquiry.
So just being there is enough?
Yes. The presence of the leader is the pressure. It does not matter if they apply explicit verbal coercion or not.
Wow.
The proximity itself, the mere fact that a vice president is taking the time to pull you aside privately to ask about a highly sensitive, restricted topic signals to the employee that leadership is highly interested in watching closely.
Which is terrifying.
It creates profound uncertainty for the witness about whether it is actually safe to continue cooperating with the official investigation.
That creates what the materials describe as a chilling effect.
Yes, the chilling effect.
The temperature in the room drops. The psychological safety evaporates, and everyone just freezes in place to avoid becoming a target.
And the concept of the chilling effect is taken incredibly seriously at the highest levels of law enforcement and corporate governance.
It's not just an HR buzzword.
Not at all. The regulatory stakes here are massive. For instance, if you look at the Department of Justice and their 2024 evaluation of corporate compliance programs.
The ECCP.
Right, exactly, the ECCP. They explicitly evaluate whether organizations maintain strict investigation integrity.
Okay.
The DOJ doesn't just look at whether a company has a compliance manual on a shelf. They look at the lived reality of the employees.
What's actually happening on the ground?
Right. They want to know, do your employees genuinely feel safe to cooperate, or is your leadership quietly, subtly chilling their participation in the hallways?
I hear that, but I have to play devil's advocate here for a second and push back on this premise.
Sure, go for it.
Let's be fair to Robert's position. He is a VP running a massive, high-stakes sales department.
He is?
If his team is under a microscope, doesn't he have a legitimate business need to understand what is affecting his workflow and his personnel.
It seems like you would.
Right. Is he really supposed to just fly completely blind while his department is scrutinized? Managing a team in the dark doesn't feel like responsible leadership either.
Well, that is the exact trap that so many dedicated, high-performing leaders fall into.
A trap.
Yeah. This is where we have to separate a leader's internal intent from a leader's external actions.
Okay, unpack that for me.
Robert's intent, wanting to be a good steward of his department and anticipate operational roadblocks, is completely understandable.
Right, it makes sense.
But the structural reality of his executive authority means he can never, ever have a truly casual conversation about a serious ethics probe with a subordinate.
Because of the power dynamics?
Exactly. The power imbalance makes it impossible.
Because he wears the vice president badge, whether he wants to acknowledge its weight in that moment or not.
When you hold that much unchecked power over someone's professional livelihood, you forfeit the ability to just be a curious guy making small talk in the hallway.
You lose that privilege.
You do. You no longer have the luxury of casual curiosity. Every question you ask a subordinate about a sensitive topic is automatically filtered through the lens of your authority, and it will be interpreted as a directive, a warning, or a subtle demand for loyalty.
So the intent is totally irrelevant if the impact is intimidation.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now that we understand the invisible crushing weight of this proximity pressure, let's talk about how someone actually navigates out of it.
The multiple choice test part of the scenario.
Exactly. Because in our scenario, both the leader and the witness faced a critical juncture. And unfortunately, they both took the wrong path.
They really did.
Let's start with the witness. If she is trapped in that hallway, feeling the full force of proximity pressure, what are her actual avenues of escape?
Let's break down her potential choices. The path she actually took, let's call it choice A, was the path of self-preservation through withdrawal.
She gave a minimal, non-committal answer to the VP, went back to her desk, canceled her compliance interview, and completely disengaged.
Right. She prioritized protecting herself from the immediate perceived threat of her boss.
Which completely killed the investigation and allowed whatever underlying ethical issue was happening to continue unchecked.
Yeah.
So that is a massive systemic failure.
It is. Now, another path she might have considered, choice C, would be appeasement.
Appeasement.
Yeah, she could have given Robert a vague but satisfying answer to get him to leave her alone and then continued sneaking off to her compliance interviews secretly.
Just praying Robert never brought it up again. Oh, man, that sounds like a recipe for a massive stress ulcer. The mental gymnastics required to play double agent between your vice president and your compliance team would be exhausting.
Incredibly exhausting.
Plus, it leaves the compliance investigators totally in the dark that a VP is actively poking around their witness pool.
Which is a huge problem for them. Which brings us to the optimal path, choice B. Though admittedly, it's the most difficult one to execute in the moment.
Right. What's choice B?
The correct move for the witness was to establish a firm boundary. She needed to politely decline to discuss the investigation with Robert, perhaps using a neutral phrase like, I've been instructed that I'm not at liberty to discuss that matter.
Okay, just shut it down professionally.
Right. But stopping there isn't enough. As soon as she was out of that hallway, she needed to immediately notify the compliance team about the interaction, document exactly what Robert asked her, and then continue her cooperation with the probe.
You know, when I was reviewing the source material on that specific reporting step, I immediately thought about how incredibly uncomfortable that action feels in real-world office culture.
It goes against all our instincts.
It really does.
Yeah.
Reporting the vice president to the compliance department feels like tattling. It feels like you are turning your own boss in for a crime, and like nobody wants to be the office snitch.
No, of course not.
But it really isn't that at all. It's much more like reporting a massive pothole on your street to the city council.
That is a brilliant way to frame it.
Right. You aren't formally accusing the vice president of maliciously digging the hole in the asphalt. You're just letting the city know a severe hazard exists in the road so they can manage it before someone wrecks their car. You are just reporting a structural fact.
That pothole analogy frames the reality perfectly. You are simply giving the compliance team the operational facts they need to protect the integrity of their own process.
Yeah.
And here is why taking that choice B path of reporting the interaction is so absolutely critical for the employee's own long-term safety.
Why is that?
Because most modern corporate non-retaliation policies are specifically designed to protect witnesses who report inappropriate contact or proximity pressure.
Ah, So by formally reporting the uncomfortable hallway chat, she actually built a documented legal and HR shield around her own job.
Exactly. The documentation is her armor. If she stays silent and withdraws from the investigation, she has zero protection because nobody knows she is under duress.
She's just out there on her own.
But if she reports the proximity pressure, she is instantly legally and structurally protected by the organization's own formal rules.
Wow, so it's a defensive move.
It is unequivocally the safest move for her career trajectory, even if it feels terrifying to execute in that 10-second hallway interaction.
That paints a really clear picture of the witness's dilemma. What about Robert? He had his own diverging paths before he ever opened his mouth.
He did. Robert chose choice A, the informal downward path.
The hallway ambush.
Right. He thought a casual hallway question directed at a subordinate wasn't a threat, so he assumed it was harmless. We see how disastrously that ended for the company's internal policing.
An entirely avoidable disaster.
It was. Now, if Robert felt that burning executive need to understand the risk to his sales pipeline, his choice C alternative was to seek guidance before acting.
Okay, so talking to someone else.
Yeah, he could have gone to his own manager or to the HR department to ask what his communication limits were regarding the investigation before he ever approached the employee.
Taking a beat to ask for permission rather than forgiveness.
Exactly.
But even that feels a bit messy, like he's still trying to find a loophole to get the gossip.
It is a bit messy. Which leads us to choice B, the absolute golden rule for leaders navigating these waters.
And what is that?
The correct path for management is total containment. A leader must not contact anyone connected to the investigation outside of explicitly sanctioned channels. Full stop.
No exceptions.
No exceptions for just staying informed. If a leader has an operational need to understand the timeline or scope of a probe, they must direct all of those questions upward, directly to the compliance team or the legal department.
So you look up, not down.
Right. You never, ever seek informal updates downward from potential witnesses.
So what does this all mean when we zoom out from the hallway and look at the company as a whole?
It's a big shift in perspective.
Yeah, because we've solved the individual choices. We know Robert should have directed his curiosity upward, and we know the employee should have reported the pothole. But it feels like there's a much bigger, much more dangerous issue lurking here than just two people misreading a social cue between meetings.
Oh, there absolutely is. When you zoom out from the individual psychology, you see a massive systemic failure at the organizational level.
Systemic failure.
Think about the chain of events here. Why was Robert wandering the hallway feeling entitled to ask these questions in the first place? And perhaps more importantly, why did the compliance team just let their key witness disappear into thin air?
That detail really stood out to me, the sources. The compliance team just blindly accepted scheduling conflict as the legitimate reason the witness withdrew.
They didn't push back at all.
They didn't dig into it.
Yeah.
They didn't ask a single follow-up question. They never connected the dots between Robert's hallway conversation and the stalled investigation.
Because they couldn't connect those dots. They didn't have the information.
Right.
And they lacked that critical information because the organization fundamentally failed to train its employees that reporting a leader's inquiry is both appropriate and actively protected.
They didn't know they could report it.
Exactly. If you do not explicitly teach your workforce that they are allowed to report proximity pressure, they are always going to choose to suffer in silence to protect their paychecks.
The silence is an organizational gap, not just an individual failing.
A gaping hole in the company's armor. And that failure of training applies equally to the leadership tier. If an organization does not provide its executives with explicit written guardrails detailing exactly who is off limits and what constitutes prohibited contact prior to an investigation launching, those leaders are naturally going to fill that void with their own judgment.
And as we established, an executive's own judgment defaults to, well, I'm a VP. I need to know what's going on to run my business.
Exactly. Informing a leader that an investigation is happening in their department without simultaneously giving them strict, unambiguous behavioral boundaries is essentially setting a trap for them.
Wow.
It is a recipe for catastrophic interference.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me and honestly a bit terrifying for anyone in middle or upper management.
Let's hear it.
Robert's innocent check-in didn't just stall a minor internal HR probe. According to the source material, his lack of boundaries potentially exposed the entire company and himself personally to massive regulatory and legal scrutiny.
Yeah, this is the harsh legal reality that catches so many seasoned executives completely off guard.
It's serious.
It's very serious. When you transition from a purely internal matter to the context of a government or regulatory inquiry, say, dealing with the SEC or the DOJ, what Robert did in that hallway changes categories.
It's not just a chat anymore.
No. It can easily be characterized by prosecutors as witness tampering, obstruction of justice, or illegal interference.
Wait, really? Even if he meant absolutely no harm? Even if he was genuinely just trying to be a good, proactive manager?
The law does not care about his proactive management style.
Oh, wow.
The "I was just staying casually informed" defense does not exist in the eyes of regulatory enforcement. Courts and investigators do not need hard proof that a leader explicitly, verbally instructed an employee to withhold documents or lie to investigators.
So if they aren't looking for a recorded threat, what metric are they actually evaluating?
They look for the presence of reasonable apprehension.
Reasonable apprehension?
Yes. Did the leader's actions create a reasonable fear in the mind of the witness that their continued cooperation with authorities was unwelcome by management?
And in this case?
Given Robert's title, his control over her career, and the private nature of the conversation, the legal answer is almost certainly yes. The action and its impact are the problem, not the internal intent behind it.
That is incredibly sobering. I mean, a casual question about an old meeting instantly transforming into an obstruction of justice charge just because of the title printed on a business card.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it proves a fundamental truth about corporate governance.
What's that?
A multi-million dollar compliance program, complete with AI monitoring and beautifully designed code of conduct handbooks, is really only as strong as its weakest hallway conversation.
That is so true.
You can have all the anonymous reporting hotlines in the world, but if proximity pressure is allowed to thrive in the shadows of your office corridors, your entire program is fundamentally broken.
Wow. Let's bring all of these threads together. Today, we have unpacked how a critical ethics investigation can completely unravel without anyone ever raising their voice or making a single threat.
A silent derailment.
Yeah. We learned that structural power differentials do all the heavy lifting. Your job title speaks volumes louder than your tone of voice ever could. We explored the very real, paralyzing danger of proximity pressure, where just being in the same room as an authority figure can create a massive chilling effect that shuts down cooperation.
And we also established the necessary guardrails to survive these scenarios.
Right, the action steps.
For the witness, you have to recognize the pressure, firmly decline the conversation, document the interaction, and report it to compliance like a pothole in the road.
Exactly.
And for the leader, you maintain absolute zero contact regarding the investigation. Downward curiosity is dangerous. Compliance is your only valid upward channel for information.
And to you listening to this deep dive right now, this lesson extends so far beyond just formal ethics investigations. It is a vital reminder to become hyper-aware of your own organizational footprint.
It applies everywhere.
It really does.
Yeah.
If you manage people, if you have a title, you possess a gravitational pull. You must be aware of the heavy weight your words carry, even when you genuinely think you are just making light small talk.
You're never just making small talk.
Right. And if you are the one on the receiving end, answering those questions, remember that you have the right to set professional boundaries and utilize the structural protections your organization is legally obligated to provide.
Understanding this dynamic completely changes how you view everyday workplace interactions.
It really makes you second guess every water cooler chat.
It should. We have seen today how a leader's casual question carries enough invisible psychological weight to completely shut down a formal legal investigation.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder if that intense power dynamic is always running silently in the background. How often does a boss's casual check-in accidentally crush everyday innovation?
Oh, that's a wild thought.
How often does a passing question stop an employee from sharing a brilliant, unconventional idea simply because the boss looked a little too closely at it before it was ready?
That is a brilliant and slightly haunting point to end on. How much human potential is quietly being chilled right next to the water cooler every single day? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the subtle dynamics around you. Keep looking for the invisible forces at play in your own workplace. And we will catch you next time.